Mary Baker Eddy, God's Great Scientist, Volume 2. Preface. Volume 1 of Mary Baker Eddy, God's Great Scientist, is a prerequisite to this volume. It contains a discussion of Chapter 1, Natural Science, in Mrs. Eddy's first edition of Science and Health. That first chapter, Natural Science, is extremely important. It lays the foundation for what will now be discussed in her second chapter, Imposition and Demonstration, with which this volume, too, deals. Actually, of course, Mrs. Eddy's first chapter, Natural Science, lays the groundwork for all that follows in her remarkable God-dictated, quote, precious volume, unquote. In writing the first edition, Mrs. Eddy began at the portals of heaven. This was perfectly natural, since her greatest revelation had catapulted her whole thinking process into an entirely new realm, a spiritually, divinely, scientific realm. Born of revelation's zenith, her new spiritual vision resulted in spiritual declarations so far above the average human comprehension, the publishers of her day twice rejected what she had written, saying they would not attempt to publish something they could not understand. This, in spite of Mrs. Eddy having done her best to couch the new spiritually scientific ideas in understandable language, to adopt an idiom comprehensible to the mentality of the 1870s. The difficulty, of course, lay in Mrs. Eddy's transformed viewpoint, which translated man and the universe back into spirit. Her great revelation and discovery had put her mind in tune with the mind of God, infinite good, and caused it to move in the grooves of omnipotence, in the vast spiritual realm of the mind that is love. The group discussion recorded in Volume 1 of Mary Baker Eddy, God's Great Scientist, reveals how she called on her students and readers to consider with her the infinitude of spiritual reality. Before students could be on her wavelength and travel in the new spiritual dimensions, which her thought was contemplating, she had to find a medium of communication by which to bridge the deep chasm that yawned between the vast spiritual realm that had opened up to her and the material standpoint of the world. To convey to her listeners and readers how to reach her divinely subjective standpoint, how to exchange the wrong viewpoint for spiritual reality, was the problem that loomed before her. The spiritual facts were clear in her mind. The difficulty arose in trying to convey, in the limited terms of human language, the here-ness, the now-ness of present perfection, just awaiting humanity's recognition. How could she awaken mankind to know that their real mind was God? To find the everyday terminology, or invent a new set of words through an exact system of capitalization, in order to convey the meaning of this infinite theme, was necessary. The liberty she took, quote, with capitalization in order to express the new tongue, has well nigh constituted a new style of language, unquote, she tells us, and the correct use of capital letters in composition caps the climax of the old new tongue. Christian Science requires a new language, God's language. Quote, human language can repeat only an infinitesimal part of what exists, unquote. Spirit being all, its meaning and language must be wholly spiritual. Therefore, the revelation, discovery, and presentation of Christian Science became requisite in the divine order. For this, she needed words. With the right words in the right places and order, she knew she could nudge humanity a little closer to a comprehension of its present divinity. With all her heart, Mrs. Eddy yearned to take the things of reality of divine love, which through her revelation and discovery had become native to her thought, and translate them into a language comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. Words were the God-given means. As someone has said, words are innocent, neutral, precise, standing for this, describing that, meaning the other. So if you look after them, you can build bridges across incomprehension and chaos. Mrs. Eddy did just that. She made use of language's most impressive and extraordinary quality or peculiarity, namely, its unlimited potential for expressing new thoughts and ideas. She found the right words, and with the right words in the right places, she built a bridge across the gulf of outmoded religious beliefs, mysticism, vague emotional and haphazard thinking, to the heaven of spiritual understanding and reality. It took 432 editions of Science and Health to complete this task. As God's recording scribe, she began the process in her truth-bringing first edition, which had been heralded by the mighty angel of the Book of Revelation, 10:1-2. In this pioneering edition, she reveals that opinions and false beliefs have made us believe we are man rather than mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. In other words, God, which shadows forth man or its idea. This little volume, dear reader, contains a group discussion of Mary Baker Eddy's God-Sent First Edition's second chapter, Imposition and Demonstration. In this chapter, Imposition and Demonstration, we find the crux of the great revelation that came with the second coming of the Christ in the writings of Mary Baker Eddy. We learn in this chapter that as progress compels change and science pushes the centuries onward, we will awaken from the Adam dream. With this awakening, the corporeal sense of creation or human birth is cast out. Mrs. Eddy, on page 56, 1910 edition, equates human birth with the great red dragon that was cast out and shown to be nothingness. May the following pages now send thee, quote, like a bee to gather honey out of the flowers and weeds, the wheat and the unreal tares. Every garden is furnished with either, and so is ours. August 1984, Helen Wright. The following account was a group discussion with 19 young people. But for the sake of continuity, we will read it as a straight narrative. Unless otherwise specified, all references in this chapter are from the first edition of Science and Health. We've come together to continue our examination of Mary Baker Eddy's first edition of Science and Health. We will begin with the discussion of its second chapter, Imposition and Demonstration. She loses little time in getting to the heart of what she means by imposition, although there seems to be a slight attempt to veil her meaning by alluding to spiritualism, calling spiritualists gross materialists, etc. But it is not difficult to grasp her meaning and see that it is consistent with what we found in our examination of Chapter 1, Natural Science, where she steadfastly maintained the fundamental error was the belief that we are man rather than soul, God. Man, she maintained, is mind's, God's expression or reflection. This mind is your mind. Here she states, quote, a suffering, sinning, and dying condition, such as must ever remain, while the belief of soul in body and intelligence in man or matter remains, cannot be preferable to the sinless joy and perfect harmony that a recognition of life as spirit, possessing all beauty and good, without a single demand for pleasure or pain of body confers. Why so many called spiritualists are very gross materialists is because they make personality spirit, and the only conscious existence, and rejecting a personal God, making a God of persons, which is equally fatal to the science of being, persons called spirits instead of principle, that is, spirit and truth, are their trust, while a belief in spirits belongs to the darker ages and is demonology, unquote. Right on the second page of this chapter 2, she states, "When we are spirit, we shall have gained the high import of Jesus' statement, 'I and my Father are one,' and shall find, too, this oneness occasions no loss of identity, but that 'I' signifies spirit and not matter, principle and not person, soul and not body, even the intelligence represented by all ideas, symbolizing harmony from the blade of grass to a star," unquote. Then she says that the question at present is whether this I is principle or person, soul or body, God or man. Principle, she says, is the I am or soul. And remember how many times in chapter 1, Natural Science, she reminded us that we are soul and not body. But where do we place the I, she asks? Is it spirit in matter, soul in body? Notice the reference just read from page 65 that she says, finding ourselves spirit occasions no loss of identity. But people generally think that if they had not been born into matter, they would have no identity. However, a fundamental teaching of Christian Science is that the belief of being born into matter, which in turn assigns to matter the power and prerogative of spirit, is the very thing that causes man to become the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe. In Divine Science, the belief that spirit creates its opposite matter is seen to be an erroneous conclusion. Mrs. Eddy states, "Here is where Christian Science sticks to its text, and other systems of religion abandon their own logic. Here also is found the pith of the basal statement, the cardinal point in Christian Science, that matter and evil, including all inharmony, sin, disease, death, are unreal. Sin was defined by Mrs. Eddy as the connubial relationship, according to a statement by Laura Sargent. Mortals accept natural science, wherein no species ever produces its opposite. Then why not accept divine science on this ground? Since the scriptures maintain this fact by parable and proof, asking, do men gather grapes of thorns, or figs of thistles? Doth a fountain send forth at the same time sweet water and bitter? Creation, evolution, or manifestation, being in and of spirit, mind, must be spiritual and mental." In our current edition, Mrs. Eddy makes the following statements. "Mortal thought forms its offspring after human illusions. Mortals would procreate man and make God in their own image and likeness. What is the God of a mortal but a mortal magnified? God created all through mind and made all perfect and eternal. Where then is the necessity for recreation or procreation?" Unquote. Once having been alerted to the great spiritual fact that we are soul and not body, God and not man, and the, quote, "the body is but a reflex shadow of immortal soul," unquote, as she so forcefully spells it out in the first edition, you see that same message on nearly every page of the current textbook. Fundamental necessity in teaching. Time and patience are necessary. The greatest reform, with almost unutterable truths to translate, must wait to be transfused into the practical and to be understood in the new tongue, unquote. That teacher does most for his students who divests himself most of pride and self, and, by reason thereof, is able to empty his students' minds of error, the crucial error of believing in the necessity of procreation and that man is the father of man, that they may be filled with truth. The immortal words of Jesus, who had much to say on this subject, were articulated in a decaying language and then left to the providence of God. Mary Baker Eddy was to interpret them in her valiant effort to awaken the dull senses, intoxicated with pain or pleasure. to the infinite meaning of those words. The war between science and the senses is a revolutionary struggle. What the Great Red Dragon signifies. In those sessions we talked about Mrs. Eddy's hiding her teaching in fulfillment of Jesus' parable of the leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole was leavened. Could it be stated directly, I mean bluntly, exactly what she hid? It can. It is really the vital question. The tenaciously held belief in human birth. It has long been avoided because it is still extremely unpopular, but sincere seekers of truth cannot avoid facing it. What we have to avoid is stating the truth too bluntly. All is lost if the truth so shocks our listener that he runs for cover. Mrs. Eddy said, "Mankind is face to face with the last enemy, human birth, and knows it not." Does this mean Mrs. Eddy's writings are all directed toward the overcoming of this last enemy, human birth, but that her teaching had to be hidden? We know in St. John's vision of the apocalypse, the great dragon, Animagnetism, was cast out of heaven, as Revelation tells us. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. If you will read page 56, line 11 of our present Science and Health, you will notice that what is cast out is the corporeal sense of creation. In other words, Jesus prophesied to St. John that human birth, the last enemy, alias the great red dragon, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world, was to be cast out. Here the corporeal sense of creation, or human birth, is equated with the great red dragon and is cast out. Could it be plainer? If Jesus was on earth today, those who feel that human birth is a blessed event would cry out anew, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" This dragon stands for the sum total of human belief called animal magnetism, belief that organic animal life produces sin, sickness, and death. This dragon is mortal mind, and one theory about this mortal mind is that its sensations can reproduce man, can form blood, flesh, and bones. The Revelator lifts the veil from this embodiment of all evil and beholds its character. He sees a great red dragon at the couch of the ideal deliverer of this present age, causing her sore travail. The Revelator sees that old serpent, whose name is devil or evil, holding untiring watch, that he may bite the heel of truth and devour the offspring of the spiritual woman, who is prolific in health, holiness, and immortality. Unquote. If you will turn to page 265, 1910 edition, you will notice it says, "The error is unreal and obsolete," unquote. Then to find out what the error is, we look at the marginal heading, which reads, "Mortal birth and death." It is mortal birth and death that is unreal and obsolete. To repeat, the corporeal sense of creation is unreal and obsolete, and is equated with the great dragon, which must be cast out. Understanding and comfort will come to the seeker after truth by turning to page 68, which begins, "Proportionately as human generation ceases, the unbroken links of eternal, harmonious being will be spiritually discerned," unquote. Actually, once we take seriously the fundamental platform in science, that God makes and governs man, that man is therefore not a product of the union of the sexes, there is no longer a mystery concerning what Mrs. Eddy hid. We then see logical evidence of it on every page, especially as our grasp of the system grows stronger and we accept her teaching that we are divine principle mind, which can only create spiritually, never materially. As we have already discussed, Revelation 10:7 speaks of the mystery that should be finished when the seventh angel sounded. The mystery was finished when Mrs. Eddy completed her mission. Jesus' statements on birth and marriage. In our last session, we were reminded that Mrs. Eddy told a class that it was Jesus' teaching on this very point of human birth that made the high priests determine it is expedient for us that one man should die, so that the whole nation not perish. Matthew 22:30 records Jesus saying, "In the resurrection, in the awakening from the Adam dream, they neither marry nor are given in marriage." Matthew 19, speaking of little children who have no knowledge of sex, he said, "Of such is the kingdom of heaven." Matthew 23, "Call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your Father which is in heaven." Moving on to Mark, Jesus said, "For when they shall rise from the dead, from the Adam dream of life in matter, they neither marry nor are given in marriage." Mark 13, "Woe to them that are with child, and to them that give suck." Then we come to Luke. "They did eat, they drank, they married wives. They were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all." Luke, "They which shall be accounted worthy to obtain the resurrection from the dead, from the belief of life and in sensation in matter, neither marry nor are given in marriage." Luke 23, "Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bear." Lastly, in John 8, Jesus speaks plainly about human birth. He tells them they can't understand him because, quote, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning," believing there is life and sensation in matter is the murderer. "When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, ye believe me not." Unquote. Among notes preserved of Mrs. Eddy's teaching, the following may be found. Quote, "In a booklet entitled Fragment of a Lost Gospel, published by Oxford University Press, giving account of sayings of Jesus that are regarded as authentic by scholars, we find the following. When Salome asked when those things about which she questioned should be made known, the Lord said, 'When ye trample upon the garment of shame, when the two become one, and the male with the female, neither male nor female.' The meaning being that Christ's kingdom on earth would not manifest itself until man had returned to the state of innocence, in which sexual ideas and relations had no place. When Salome asked how long death would prevail, the Lord said, 'So long as ye women bear children, for I have come to destroy the works of the female.'" Logia of Jesus, Christian Science Journal, Volume 25. Jesus was asked, "How long shall the dominion of death continue?" Jesus saith, "As long as material birth continues, for I am come to destroy the works of birth." See Matthew 5 and Science and Health, page 69. Jesus said, "I am a man who has told you the truth." In the Old Testament, there are many statements that Jesus must have brought to his listeners' attention. For instance, Jeremiah 20 cursed the day of his birth. Job cursed this day and said, "Let the day perish wherein I was born." In Job 14, he reiterates, "Man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of troubles." Mrs. Eddy's similar statements. In our discussion of her Chapter 1, Natural Science, see Mary Baker Eddy, God's Great Scientist, Volume 1, we reviewed the teaching that Jesus was put to death because of his outspoken and uncompromising stand on human procreation. Very few are ready for this teaching even today. Had Mrs. Eddy not hidden her teaching on this subject, her mission would have been aborted. Now let's tie this in with what Mrs. Eddy has written in Chapter 1 of the first edition. What seems to stand out are her plainly worded statements such as, "We are spirit, and spirit is God. We are soul, and to admit ourselves soul sets us free. We shall be found love, life, and truth when we understand them." Remember, this is Mrs. Eddy's teaching. There are dozens of such forthright, open, profound, and unmistakable statements of truth in the first and other early editions, which are also in the final edition, but in veiled form. She makes it clear that Jesus regarded himself principle, and unless we understand that we are principle, we have nothing to work with or from. All consciousness is mind, principle. On page 10 of the first edition, she says, "Opinions and beliefs are the foundation of all error." Just what is the error? It is the false belief that makes us think we are man, the reflex shadow of God, when the truth is we are spirit and spirit is God, as clearly stated in the first edition. She tells us the mistake of thinking we are man instead of knowing we are spirit and that spirit is God adversely affects the harmony of man far more than the Ptolemaic blunder relating to the sun and earth, in that it reverses the order of science and assigns to matter the power and prerogative of spirit, so that man becomes the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe. As has been repeatedly emphasized, this blunder robs us of knowing that we have sovereign power to think and act rightly, and of knowing that we are always alone with our own being and with the reality of things. The belief that man is born of a woman is strongest in the most material natures. The physical body is an unfoldment of mortal mind out into expression. Mortals say, "I have gotten a man from the Lord." But this was a falsehood from the beginning, for this man was a foul murderer, and truth and love never produced the Adam and his progeny. That which is not God or his idea is not only evil and mortal, but unreal, yea, illusion. First edition, 258. Unquote. What Mrs. Eddy had to hide with those open, forthright statements that we are God. The mortal, misinterpreting these, assumes he is God, and that he, through a process of sexual union, can create other mortals after his own kind. Her denunciation of, quote, "marriage synonymous with legalized lust," unquote, and of corporeal creation as that which is cast out of heaven, alias the great red dragon, all one and the same error, caused her to be crucified, as it did Jesus, when he put forth this same truth. Could it be stated in one simple sentence? Yes. She hid the truth that human birth is the murderer, that there is nothing jubilant attached to the birth of a mortal that suffers and pays the penalty of his parents, misconception of man and God's creation, as she explained in her Christmas message to the Christian Science Board of Directors. In this message, she added, "But there is joy unutterable in knowing that Christ, our true selfhood, had no birth, no death, and that we may find in Christ, in the true sense of being, life apart from birth, sorrow, sin, and death. Oh, may your eyes not be holden, but may you discern spiritually what is our Redeemer." Unquote. Notice how the next bit of evidence links her mission with that of Jesus, who said, "I am come to destroy the works of birth." As we read this account of Mrs. Eddy's teaching, and remember, she said her mission was to complete the works of Christ Jesus, the following incident was recorded by Lydia Hall, who served in Mrs. Eddy's home. Mrs. Eddy received a letter at Pleasant View from Christian Scientists in Concord, asking her to congratulate them over the birth of a Christian Science baby. She read it aloud. Then, with apparent indignation, uttered, "A Christian Science baby? A crime. Just as much a crime as a murderer would be." She paused, then raised her hand and, shaking her finger, declared with great emphasis, "No loyal Christian Scientist will ever marry." Unquote. The genius of a divine revelator. We can see why she had to hide the pivotal point of her teaching from the worldly material thought that would again crucify this truth. The ability to hide the mystery of godliness until it becomes self-revelatory to a receptive consciousness is part of the genius of a divine revelator. Nevertheless, the clergy saw she was proving her teaching that she meant business, and that it was not just empty rhetoric. The clergy, the medical, the press, and their sympathizers saw that Mrs. Eddy meant business, hence the terrible persecution she encountered, and the inescapable necessity to hide this teaching or to be lost, ridiculed out of existence. Quote, "The disciples and prophets thrust disputed points on minds unprepared for them. This cost them their lives and the world's temporary esteem." Since Jesus called the belief that man is a creator the murderer, what or who, then, is the Creator? Who is the only I or us? In the first edition, Mrs. Eddy wrote, "The science of being reveals this I, not body, nor in body, but soul outside of matter, spirit and not person, and through this reckoning man gains eternal identity." On the same page, she states, "When we are spirit, we shall have gained the high import of this scripture, I and my Father are one." Wouldn't it logically follow that if we are spirit, and spirit is God, that we would be the only I or us, since there is only the one and all consciousness is mind? Naturally, we are now speaking in the realm of the real, the spiritual realm, not the realm of the illusions that we seem engulfed in. Then who or what is it that in Genesis 1 says, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness"? It would have to be the us, the love, life, and truth, which she says we will be when we understand them. It would have to be spirit, soul, divine principle, which she has told us we are. Creation, wholly mental, and spiritual. Then if the us, or life, truth, and love, is the Creator, what would the nature of its creation be? It would be wholly mental, a divinely mental and spiritual creation, since like produces like. If this were understood spiritually and acted upon, what would happen to the human birth process resulting from a union of the sexes, and for that matter, to the entire marriage synonymous with legalized lust syndrome? As Mrs. Eddy said, the whole ghastly farce would cease. Now do you see why she had to hide it? Was the world ready for this high-caliber spiritual thinking? Few are ready for it even now, although signs of progress and of spiritualization are definitely seen. The suffering the world is today undergoing will continue to compel progress, and this progress will finally take off all human shackles and destroy every error. Mrs. Eddy wrote that there would be no more feeling in the body than in the trunk of a tree which you gash, or the electric wire which you stretch, were it not for mortal mind. She taught that matter has no sensation. One theory about this mortal mind is that its sensations can reproduce man, can form blood, flesh and bones, 1910 edition. What would the humanly logical men of the cloth, doctors and others, materially intelligent folks, deduce from these statements? They saw the inevitable consequences of such teaching, and, as was said with the first coming of the Christ, So it was now said concerning the second, This woman performs many miracles. If we don't stop her, all people will soon believe her, and there will be no more fleshly offspring. Then what will happen to our profession? Our pocketbooks. She must be stopped. The same elements in society that consider Jesus a criminal for spiritualizing materialistic beliefs persisted 40 long years in their persecution of her whom God had appointed to complete the work of Christ Jesus, of her whose writings constituted the second coming of the Christ. But no weapon formed against her prospered. In spite of harassment and the fixedness of human illusions, she gloriously fulfilled her mission, leaving us the greatest, the richest of all inheritances through the understanding of omnipresent love. It takes a lot of study to see what is really in her writings. For example, she doesn't say openly what sin is, but when Laura Sargent asked her mother, What do you mean by sin, sin, sin? She answered, I mean the connubial relation. Quote, God made them male and female from the beginning, but his creation was not physical. He made qualities and formations of character, which shall ever remain thus as the reflection of God, divine love. Is the connubial relation sin? Yes. Can you be a Christian Scientist and maintain it now? For honesty is the Christian Scientist's first law. Can you uphold the old marriage relation, which is only legalized lust, and be a Christian Scientist?